This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The city of Charlotte has been busy over the last few months. They decided to bring baseball downtown, decided not to okay a capital improvement plan that would have put a streetcar back on the streets of Charlotte, among other things. And just this week, they decided to buy the long-vacant Eastland Mall. And, of course, the city's been getting ready for the Democratic National Convention, which opens in just a month. The city's chief Democrat, Democrat-in-Chief, Mayor Anthony Fox, has a lot riding on the outcome of that convention, and even though he doesn't have a vote on council, played a role in the other major decisions that have unfolded this past year. So we have invited him to join us for the hour to talk about some of these things. Welcome back to the program. Good to see you.
Good to see you, Mike.
Of course, the topic on everybody, we have to start with the Democratic National Convention. Will the city, is the party, are you ready?
I think we're all ready for this wonderful event. That will really showcase the city. It's the first time many people across the world will have a chance to see Charlotte and North Carolina in full display, and we're just excited to be able to tell the story of this great city.
When I asked the question, because, you know, when any big event happens, like the London Olympics, for instance, there were these rumors that they weren't going to be ready and that they'd be plagued by strikes and security concerns, and we know that some of those things are coming true, but there have been questions about fundraising surrounding the DNC, about enthusiasm among Democrats. A lot of prominent Democrats have decided to sit this one out. The same thing is happening in Tampa with the Republican convention as well. Controversy over the opening day ceremonies, moving it from one place to another. Has enough money been raised?
We're going to have a great convention, and I'm very confident that the resources will be there to have a great convention. But let's be clear that the pathway that's been laid for fundraising for the convention's been tougher because of the self-imposed restrictions that the DNC has required. That is, no corporations, no PACs, no lobbyists giving money to conventions, which is in distinction to Tampa, where corporations, lobbyists, and PACs are giving.
But why? I mean, corporations, lobbyists, and PACs give money to politicians, and we know that it's almost becoming to the point where they run the government. So why not run the convention?
I think that's actually the point. The point is that on the flip side of it, we've raised money from 40 times the number of donors than the Denver convention, and we're not even at the convention yet. So,
but isn't it dangerous to handicap yourself?
Well, of course, it's not something that has been done before. So you're sort of building the airplane while you're flying it. But on the other hand, we're excited about being able to include more people, average people, in helping to support this convention. And I think at the end of the day, you're going to see a very distinct difference between Tampa, which is going to be a closed, sort of a white tablecloth convention, and the DNC convention, which is going to be much more inclusive.
Although they are calling their convention a convention without walls.
Well, they have walls, because, they're only these exclusive folks are going to be able to get into their convention. And just last week, there was an announcement that, that volunteers, people could put sweat equity in and get into the president's speech on Thursday.
This is the 931 plan.
Yes.
What does 931 mean?
It's for folks who volunteer on the president's campaign. They commit to doing 9 hours of volunteer work, three shifts, which translates into three shifts, and they get one seat on Thursday to watch the president's speech.
At the stadium. And are they the only non-delegates or non-media people getting in?
Unclear. I think there will be lots of other people there for various reasons, but this is the only guaranteed way for people to get in if they're not a delegate.
So I come back to my question. Has enough money been raised?
Well, as I say, you have to have money to have a great convention, and I've told you we're going to have a great convention.
And a lot of, so you're not going to answer that question. A lot of Democrats.
Well, I did answer the question. We're going to have a great convention,
all
Mike.
All right. Yeah. But are we going to break even? Are we going to have enough money? Are we going to be coming hat in hand after the convention to pay for things after the convention has come and gone?
Well, here's the thing. The city of Charlotte is not a backstop for this convention. Okay. And so taxpayers are absolutely protected from this. And in fact, we've gone to Washington, and both Tampa and Charlotte have obtained a security grant to ensure that our public safety situation is as good as we can possibly make it. So we, as the city of Charlotte, will not have any obligations following this convention.
Which we'll talk about. A lot of Democrats, I mentioned this earlier, have decided not to come. They're going to sit this convention out. Why?
Well, look, this is, you know, we're getting into the key part of the campaign season, and there are very tough races across the country, and some folks are deciding on both sides to stay in their districts and to fight for the seats that they're trying to get.
Is that a way, you're a politician, is that a way to distance yourself from Barack Obama, or is that just because you need time extra, that you need that extra 4 days to campaign?
It's an old story. In fact, the same story was present in 2008. People did the same thing, and you know it's hard to begrudge someone for focusing on the thing that allows them to make good decisions for the country. So we have to deal with it.
Getting back to money for this convention, what happened on opening day? Why are we moving it from the Speedway to wherever it's going? Where is it going, Bill?
Well, it's coming downtown, and I actually think that's a good thing. And I disagree with the premise that it's about money. I actually think the decision was made to make it easier for people to access this thing. If you think about the fact that people are used to street festivals in the city of Charlotte, and we promised to make this convention one that people could access and touch. So
how
that's
will this
what we're
festival
doing.
Be different from all the other street festivals that come downtown?
Well, in several respects. One, it's going to incorporate the Labor Day Parade, which will happen at 10 o'clock in the morning, and then it will transition into a street festival at about noon. We're going to have, hopefully, a lot of great A-list type of talent. We're still working on some of the details of that.
Going to drop a name or two?
Well, you know, Mike Collins might show up and sing a song or two. I don't know.
Good luck with that.
And we're also going
that'll
to
that'll clear the room.
No, standing room only, my friend.
Yeah.
And then we're going to also focus the community on some of the legacies that this convention has left and will continue to leave after it's over. Legacies of focus on childhood obesity and youth engagement and employment and sustainability, as well as inclusive business practices.
Of course, that street festival is on Labor Day. It's a holiday. The rest of the convention takes place during a work week, and there are still some concerns about whether or not people who work downtown, live downtown, shop downtown, well, not a heck of a lot of shopping downtown, but eat downtown, will have access to the places they frequent.
Yeah.
What can you tell us about that?
Well, I've said from the very beginning, and I still believe that folks who live here and work here should do everything that they normally do. There will be some differences, and I think primarily, there'll be some additional security protocols around parking. But you know, I think if folks are interested in performing as usual, they can still do that.
Should we plan? Are we going to be told what to do, how to do it, where to go, where we can't go, how much extra time to build into our day to get to work, to park, to get out of town, to go home, et cetera?
Yeah, so two things. For several months now, the security teams, and that includes Secret Service and the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department and a lot of other agencies, have been meeting with commercial real estate holders in downtown, as well as employers, to just keep them current. And so folks will be hearing directly from their employers. But yes, over the next several weeks, we're going to make sure we do a little more public relations in terms of helping people understand what to expect, not just from a center city perspective, but really throughout the city.
Now, we've had several discussions on this program about security plans that were implemented months ago by city council and the decision to give Kurt Walton, the city manager, the power to declare almost any activity in the city that he deems to be an extraordinary event. And when he does so, restrictions kick in about what you can carry downtown, where you can go, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of people are not too keen on these. So what's your view on those ordinances and both how they restrict free speech and assembly and how they impact protections against search and seizure and how you balance that against necessary security concerns for an event, particularly like this where the president
is coming? It's a great question. It's an as-applied kind of thing. We will be watching, and we have watched other incidences where the extraordinary event action has been triggered, like the shareholder meetings of Duke Energy and Bank of America recently. Those events have tended to go fairly smoothly. There's been demonstration activity, and folks who have an interest in expressing their views have been able to do that. And yet we've also been able to maintain the safety of the folks who are demonstrating and the folks who are not demonstrating. And that's really what we want to try to do, is not to inhibit the ability of someone to speak, but to also make sure that the protections are there. So far, so good. But, you know, we will look at this after the convention is over. And if there are tweaks that we need to make, we'll make them.
We know that 35,000 people approximately are coming to participate in the convention, either as delegates or as members of the media. But I have heard, and I've heard no real number, but I've heard estimates of 30,000 to 40,000 yeah. people coming to protest, to demonstrate. Do we have a figure on that?
We don't, but we have looked at several recent activities across the country, including the Chicago event and
it's the NATO G8.
NATO G8 and others, sort of watching what that level of protest activity is.
But 30,000 people added to the city of Chicago is significantly fewer people than 30,000 people added to the city of Charlotte.
Yeah, my point is that we are prepared for what happens, and our police department, and particularly our police chief, this is not his first rodeo. He was very high up in the Washington D.C. Police Department and is used to both protest activity and the types of protocols that occur when you have Secret Service involved and other dignitaries being moved around. So I'm confident that we'll be able to address it. And also should mention that we're not going to just have the CMPD as part of this security force. We're actually essentially doubling our police force by calling in police officers from other parts of the country.
Yeah, I read this yesterday. I didn't know this till yesterday, that I know Greensboro, for instance, is sending 150 officers and 18 vehicles, and there'll be other police forces from what, around North Carolina or around other states as well?
Around other states as well.
So have citizens been told, for instance, that if they see a Knoxville, Tennessee police officer, they have to obey him on the streets of Charlotte? Seriously.
That's part of the public relations piece of this that we'll be talking about over the next month. But the chief has done an excellent job of incorporating the plan to mobilize an additional set of forces.
Have concerns been raised about the way these other officers from other areas who may not be as that's the word I'm looking for, who may not live in areas that are as urban or as ethnically diverse as Charlotte, how they will treat the people they run into during their stay here?
There's extensive training that occurs for those officers, but let me also say this, that when there's a meeting like a G8 or a United Nations meeting or any type of big event, Charlotte Mecklenburg Police Department has dispatched some of our officers to go do those events. This is not an unusual thing for police officers to do around the country.
It's unusual for Charlotte.
Well, but it's not unusual for the officers.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how many police does that mean we'll have on the street during the convention?
We're approximately going to double our police force.
Which means what? I have no idea.
We have 1,600 today.
That's a lot of police officers on the street.
It's a lot of
all downtown mostly?
Well,
You're not allowed to say. Okay. I have a question about free speech zones, but I can't ask it now because we're going to the break. So when we come back, I want to talk about that because we had this,
sure.
We had the city attorney on yesterday.
Great.
And we talked about that a little bit. Mayor Anthony Fox is our guest. We'll get into other topics other than the Democratic convention in this next segment as well. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Anderson Heating and Cooling, full-service air conditioning, installation, and repair, serving residential communities for more than 28 years. Information at 704-596-2525. Hummingbird season is underway in Charlotte, so researchers and bird enthusiasts are gearing up to learn all they can about these birds as they flock to the area. A couple of years ago, We spoke with Susan Campbell, who has been capturing, banding, and releasing hummingbirds since 1999. She had a lot of things to say about these birds, about how to see them, how to appreciate them, how to encourage them to come to your backyard. And she joins us in an encore presentation of Charlotte Talks to tell us what she's learned and what she hopes to learn. That's tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Congress is considering a deficit reduction measure that would eliminate food stamps for nearly 2 million Americans. Debate over the cost of feeding America's poor.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks. Here on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking to Charlotte Mayor Anthony Fox about a number of topics. We've kind of fixated on the Democratic National Convention, but we'll move on from there in a moment or two. We had the city attorney on yesterday, and he couldn't or wouldn't divulge where the so-called free speech zones for protesters might be, and he couldn't or wouldn't tell us, for instance, which sidewalks would be open to pedestrians and protesters. Why hasn't that information been released, and when will it be?
I think it'll be released very soon, and I would say, if not in a matter of days, a matter of weeks.
And it's being sat on because the decisions haven't been finalized?
I don't know that it's been sat on. I think there are a lot of considerations that have to go into that, including, again, trying to strike the right balance between giving people a venue to express their opinions, but also ensuring the safety of those folks as well as the people who live here and those who are visiting.
Okay. You brought this up earlier in our conversation, and that's the $50 million that the federal government gave to Charlotte and to Tampa for security purposes during this convention. Tampa officials are crowing that they aren't like Charlotte in how they dealt with deciding how that money would be spent. They evidently did so in open city council sessions down there where people knew that X amount of dollars were going to X and X amount of dollars were going to Y. The Charlotte City Council turned the money over to Kurt Walton, the city manager, and he has the discretion to do what he pleases with that money without reporting back, at least not to the public. Why?
Well, I'm not sure that's true. I think that
that's how it's being viewed by the outside world.
Yeah. Well, I think a couple of things. First, we have asked the city manager to be more disclosing in terms of what's being spent, and he has. You've learned a lot more in the last few weeks about what some of the investments will be, and at some point, those investments will have to be reported back to the federal government through an auditing process, and they'll be itemized. So,
but is there, I guess what I'm getting at is the Tampa Convention does not have a sitting president in attendance. We do. So are there things that we are about doing with that money that Tampa doesn't have to do, and things that we are doing with that money that have to remain secret because of the nature of security regarding a sitting president?
A couple of things. We're not following Tampa. We're not following Tampa in our economic development strategy. Mm-hmm. We're not following Tampa in terms of what we want our city to become. We're not following Tampa in terms of how the convention is being done. They may be doing some things differently. We may be doing some things differently. Tampa's got a much different set of security concerns. They sit on water. And so there's a very significant maritime aspect to their security protocols that we don't have. Mm-hmm. And so I just think we have to go along the way that we're going. And again, we're going to be as public with what we can be public about. But I have to be honest with you that our security folks, their first job is to make sure that the people who live here are safe, people who demonstrate are safe, people who are coming to this convention to be part of the convention are safe. And my goal is to make sure that folks are safe, period.
Because a lot of the stuff that we're buying, evidently, will stay long after the convention is gone.
For instance, there have been some repairs to helicopter assets that will be here long after. And there are some other hard assets that will stay here after the convention is gone. And it will be an additive to our public safety.
From Charlotte's point of view, what has to happen to make this convention a success, and how important is it to the city that it be a success, and what if it's not a success? What will that do to the city?
Well, it will be successful. I think that what has to happen, again, is I think the safety pieces are important. Making sure that we strike the right balance between making sure the folks who are here to be part of the convention are able to move around through our transportation network, and that we have minimal inconvenience to residents who live here. I also think that we have to continue working to tell the story of our city. We talk about our city a lot of times in transactional terms, like we're a cheap place to do business and, you know, that sort of thing. I think now's a chance for Charlotte to really talk about the heart of the city and the character of the city to the world, because that's what I think will stick with people after this is over.
So we're going to talk a lot about
Charlotte's history, the history of a city that got to be known as the city that made integration work. I think that's a really important part of Charlotte's history that people might not associate with the South. The fact that our business community has grown substantially over the last several years in lots of different directions because we've had great leadership and we've had great talent here. I also think that we should talk about the ways in which we're struggling and challenging ourselves in ways that many communities won't. You know, an effort like Project Lift, is not an effort that you would see in many cities where the corporate community would rally around the toughest part of our school district and say, we're going to help carry some of our hardest to teach kids over the finish line by giving them the resources they need. I think those are types of things about the city that tell its character.
Some local vendors have expressed dismay about not being called upon to do business with the convention or at the convention, yet they thought they would be called upon, and it just hasn't panned out, and they're 30 days to go, and they're thinking, well, I've got to write this off because it's not going to happen. How much money is going to flow through local vendors? How many local vendors have been utilized to help make this convention work?
Well, we have the most robust effort to involve local and small businesses than any convention in history. I can tell you that for certain. And for, you know, every one vendor that complains about opportunities, there are probably one or two that have gotten an opportunity, have gotten a real shot at doing parts of this convention. It's too early to quantify what the ultimate numbers will be, but we are working to make sure we create as many opportunities as possible. I'll give you an example of how we're doing that. In some conventions, the delegate parties, which are a big event planning aspect of this thing. Many times those happen in one place. And so you get one event planner, you get one caterer, you get, you know, right. It just doesn't get spread around. To give more opportunities to small businesses, we put 12 delegate parties around the area so that we can actually involve 12 or 13 different event planners, 12 or 13 different caterers, 12 or 13 different venues to create more opportunities. And that's just one example of how we're trying to think differently about how to create opportunities for small business.
General Hansen on Twitter, we asked some of our listeners what questions they would have for you. And General Hansen on Twitter says, how can I sign up to volunteer to get my seat at that last day of the convention?
I can tell you exactly how to do that. You would go to NC.BO/9-3-1.
You got to be kidding. Do that again.
NC.BO/9-3-1.
What's the BO stand for?
Barack Obama.
Duh. Okay. NC-BO.
.BO.
See, now there you go.
See?
I'm trying to tell you, man. Do it one more time.
Just stick to singing.
All right, fine. We'll put this on our website so people can
do it. You got it. We'll get it to you.
Jeez, it's so hard. Derek tweets, how does the mayor feel about preparedness of things such as the PD office, DA's office for the convention's aftermath?
I think all of our security, and that includes the U.S. Attorney's Office and the public defenders and so forth, the federal defender, they have worked extremely closely with Secret Service and with Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department and all the other agencies. And I think everyone is working to be as ready as possible, and I feel very good about our preparation there.
Now, this looks like a plant to me, because I know that you want to talk about this. But Dwayne on Facebook wants to know, how important is regional collaboration with the smaller cities and towns in the landscape surrounding Charlotte to the city's success? And I know that you have launched a regionalism campaign, meeting with regional mayors to boost our our political capital with D.C. and with Raleigh.
Yeah, you know, early in my tenure as mayor, I reached out to our mayors all around the region, the 17-county region, including the northern part of South Carolina, and we started a bit of a regional mayors coalition, and we meet quarterly to talk about issues around the region. And I think what you're going to start to see emerge from that is a lot of regional leadership on issues like transportation, where, I-85 doesn't stop at the city limits of Charlotte, and a lot of our road networks don't stop. And as we go into a more urbanizing kind of environment in the city of Charlotte, that's going to creep over into some of the towns around us. And if we can jointly plan and jointly lobby for resources, it's going to help us going forward.
This week, the city council voted to buy the long-vacant Eastland Mall. I know you don't have a vote on council, but is that a good decision? Are you in favor of that?
I supported it, and I do think it was a good decision. A couple of things. The city, over the last 20 years or so, has been able to grow substantially by annexation. We've been able to eat up land and grow our tax base basically organically. We're almost out of land to annex, and Raleigh's about to clip the last bit of annexation power we have as a city. And tax base expansion in the city is going to have to focus on revitalizing parts of the city that have long been in a state of disrepair. Eastland is one of the more visible symbols of that in our city, and I think the city at this point is best suited to try to take that property and hopefully flip it into private hands, into a development that will help the community.
As I understand it, the city wanted to buy this because there's several different owners. Belk owns a piece of it, the old Belk store. I think Sears owns a piece of it, the old Sears store. There's another person, or Boxer Development, that owns the strips in between those those stores. And there are other concerns that have pieces of this property. And the city wanted to buy this, I'm told, so that they consolidate that into one owner, so that a purchaser could come in and buy the thing from one entity.
Exactly.
Why is that easier for the city to do, or more attractive for the city to do, than it is for a private concern to do? If you can do it, why can't I buy them all?
Well, the reality is that in situations like this across the country, a lot of times the private sector just won't. It won't go through the effort to try to unify a site like this. And so when a public entity like the city of Charlotte does that, now you have the property all tied together, and now there's an opportunity for the city to play a role in helping a private entity build something that'll be a positive attraction.
So when do you close the deal?
End of August.
Okay. Do you have a buyer in mind, or is it conceivable that the city could be stuck with this one, this elephant, white elephant on the books for years to come?
Well, there have been some expressions of interest by several film studios in portions of the site. As we talked about on Monday, that is not a 90-acre solution to the site, but it might be a portion of what happens going forward with the area. And we will continue looking for other opportunities. As I said on Monday, we need to be prepared for a long haul with this, because I hope that we're able to get this thing figured out in the next few months, but it might take longer.
In the Observer yesterday, Mark Washburn, who's a columnist who writes about a lot of different things, pointed out that Hollywood people often have these big pie-in-the-sky, big projects in their heads that never come to fruition. And then we have an email comment from somebody who says, how real is the offer to transform Eastland Mall into a movie studio? This was suggested for Philip Morris plant in Cabarrus County after Homeland began shooting here. It looked like a viable location because of its enormous size and remoteness. The potential investors on that one, for whatever reason, never got the plan off the ground. Does the Eastland offer or proposal show more promise?
Well, we'll see. Again, What you're likely to see happen is an RFP process initiated by the city in the fall, and we'll have a chance to do some due diligence on the interest that's been expressed and see where it goes.
Now, the city is paying $13.2 million for this mall. And in doing so, you're taking it off the tax books mm-hmm. for a period of time, and I think it generates about $300,000 plus a year in tax revenue for the city. If nobody steps forward, not only are we on the hook for $13.2 million, but we're losing a $500 million a year, or half a million dollars
yeah,
a year.
But look, I mean, the reality is the challenge we have in some parts of our city is that precise issue, which is, yeah, you temporarily lose the ability to capture that tax revenue, mm-hmm. but what you gain is the immediate ability to try to make something better happen in that part of the city.
Boxer Properties, who I think owns the strip of the shopping center between the anchor stores. I don't know if they own the land or not, do they?
They own some of the land.
Okay. They paid $2 million in 2010 for mm-hmm. this. So we paid 13.2. Did we get a good deal?
Well, let's be clear that we didn't pay 13.2 for the 2 million piece that Boxer bought. This is 13 for all seven portions of the site that have been subdivided. So Boxer didn't get some, you know, six times what they paid for it. Again, I think the ability to unify the site, to put it in a unitary fashion to give us an opportunity to invite the private sector in is a good move.
And this money came from already passed bond referenda.
Correct? How about that? Yeah.
And the bond authorized $16 million.
That's
so,
right.
So what happens to the rest of the $16 million?
Well, it will stay parked to support the future at Eastland Mall.
We have a question about that from Rachel on Facebook. Eastland Mall, the plans, the hopes, the dreams, and how us Eastsiders can help ensure that our neighborhood succeeds and supports development of the former mall space. Any suggestions on how citizens over there can...
Yeah, there are several neighborhood organizations that have stepped up to be part of the discussion. Charlotte East. There's also an East Charlotte Chamber that is very active, and I would encourage being connected to one of those two organizations, if not both.
There's no question that Eastland Mall right now is a blight on the landscape of the East Side and generates a lot of problems, and could generate even greater potential problems if it's not addressed over time. So for that reason, something has to be done. So what do you think? What kind of projects does the city have in mind that might make that area or that part of the East Side come alive and become an asset to the region?
Well, you know, there are still some plans that were developed by ULI a few years ago that showed that sort of a mixed-use type of development out there. I still think that may be viable. You may also see us working towards getting several commercial uses out on that site. But right now, I think the first thing we've got to do is get the closing by the end of August and initiate an RFP process to see what the interest level actually is out there and then make good choices from there.
Do you view this differently, the purchase of Eastland Mall, differently than you would the building of a Coliseum or an arena or even bringing baseball downtown, what we would call economic incentives or development in that area? Would you see it differently, or is it the same thing?
Here's what I think. I think that for
20 seconds.
Can't give you 20 seconds.
All right,
but
I'll tell you what. Yeah. We'll come back on the other side, and you have a chance to think about it.
Perfect.
We'll come back on the other side. Mayor Anthony Fox is our guest. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Levine Children's Hospital, nationally recognized among U.S. News & World Report's top 50 best children's hospitals for children's cancer care and five other specialties. CarolinasHealthcare.org/U.S. News. By the way, there is still time to register for tonight's public conversation on politics in the streets. It's a free community forum that will address how protesters, police, and city officials are preparing for free speech activity during the Democratic National Convention. That's tonight at at 7 at the Mint Museum Uptown. You can get details and register to attend at WFAE.org. Congress is considering a deficit reduction measure that would eliminate food stamps for nearly 2 million Americans. Debate over the cost of feeding America's poor. The topic of the conversation at 10 on The Diane Reeves Show. If you'd like to join our conversation, 704-926-WFAE, 800-603-WFAE or 9323 or WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks.
America's Test Kitchen is a place where we go behind the scenes to answer people's questions about both food and cooking. Hi, I'm Christopher Kimball, host of the show, and I hope you'll join me this Sunday afternoon at 3 p.m. for our weekly conversation about the science and techniques of good cooking and the truth about the world of food. That's America's Test Kitchen, Sunday at 3 p.m., right after Studio 360 on listener-supported 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Mayor Anthony Fox is our guest, and we gave out the wrong address to become a volunteer for the convention. We will put the correct address on WFAE.org in a matter of moments. Now, I asked you a question about how you saw this purchase of Eastland Mall versus, say, the money the city would kick in to bring baseball uptown. Yeah. Is it the same kind of effort, or is it a different thing in your mind?
I think it's a different thing, from the sense that for a generation, and you've been in Charlotte a long time, Mike, we have done a lot of investing in downtown to build momentum for the kind of growth we've seen. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing the fruits of it now with a vibrant nightlife and everything else. We need to have the same type of mentality towards areas like East Charlotte, areas like West Charlotte. Those areas that we have sort of written off in the past now need to become growth areas for the city to be sustainable long term. So from that standpoint, I think this is a marker for the city.
And is that also figuring into what you're saying about the fact that we're not going to be able to continue to annex? And so the
Correct.
Only way to continue to be healthy economically is to build the tax base in the areas that we have.
That's exactly right.
So that's what you're saying.
Yep.
Because we have a Facebook comment from Terry, who says, ask the mayor about the Harvard Business School study, which finds that government, quote, investments, unquote, actually harm the local economy.
Well, I haven't seen the study, and I'm not sure that that the focus of the study is on local government investment. I think it's clear to me that local government tends to do a much better job of taking resources and putting them to work in a way that generates jobs and generates vitality in cities. It's much harder to do that the more you get removed from the local level, and I think the past history of Charlotte has shown that to be the true.
Now, earlier this summer, speaking of city investments, baseball was decided. It was decided that it was a good idea to proceed with this baseball coming downtown. So in 2014, there will be baseball downtown. And I know that you were on board with that. I think you were on board with that. But you weren't?
That was one of the more ambivalent points for me. Probably the most ambivalent I've been about something. I think on the whole, the economic case is still very strong for baseball. But precisely because of what I just talked about relative to the east side and some of the parts of the city that are remaining challenged, I also felt like one of the most important things we needed to do this year was to figure out how to move the rest of our city forward. And so it wasn't an either or necessarily. Mm-hmm. But I think that the council has sent an off signal to the community that we can figure out baseball but not figure out our capital plan.
Well, let's talk about the capital plan,
sure.
Because that got torpedoed in the same meeting with the baseball being pushed up. And part of that was a streetcar from Johnson C. Smith to Presbyterian Hospital and beyond, ultimately to the Eastland Mall area. Why was council in favor of baseball, but not in favor of, they didn't veto it forever, they just put it on the table for a while, economic development program?
Well, short answer, I think, is, and then you'll have to ask different council members why, but the short answer, I think, is that the resources used for baseball were in a dedicated revenue stream, didn't require a tax increase, and could readily be dispensed to get that project done. The capital program, on the other hand, required a tax increase, and those are always difficult to do, particularly when all of us know that the community is still trying to get back on its feet. All the arguments against a tax increase right now, I think, were valid. People are still hurting. We're still trying to figure our way out. On the other hand, I don't see how the city moves forward if we don't invest in ourselves and ask our citizens to commit to the future.
Now, this package, this development package, would have included $926 million of long-term improvements, along with $119 million for the expansion of streetcar, roads, bridges, and sidewalks. And, of course, that property tax hike, 8% property tax hike, which would have added, I think, $72 a year to the tax to the taxes on a $200,000 home. We just went through, the county just went through a revaluation process that was relatively controversial. People are still struggling to come out of this recession. Many have not. Home values have stagnated or continue to decline. I guess that means that real estate sales are increasingly slow. Unemployment is high. We're above the national average in North Carolina. If we had passed that $926 million incentive plan, we would have had to raise those taxes. Is now the time to do that?
Well, I think you can fairly ask that question, and it's not an easy question to answer. I would say that it isn't the time to do it in the sense that folks are still trying to get themselves on their feet. At the same time, though, the city has some drivers that I think are really critical right now that require us to take action. One of those drivers is public safety. There are six police stations that are part of this bond package. Another driving force is our AAA bond rating. You saw in the paper the other day that the rating agencies are starting to pressure us already because of some of the private sector decisions that are being made relative to employment. They have nothing to do with the city's budget. And yet now that adds another layer to what we have to think about in terms of preserving the city's AAA bond rating. The other driver is that, again, we are at a point where we're not going to be able to grow as we've been able to grow in the last 20 years. We have to develop new ways of growing, and I firmly believe that that means upgrading our neighborhoods, committing to making some of the parts of the city that have really not been the focus of economic development in the past, making those areas stronger. And I think that you will see that there's a lot of upside to those areas if we make targeted investments there.
So they put it on the table. They didn't say it's never going to happen. When do you think this idea or this package of improvements and long-term improvements be put back on the table for a vote?
We will initiate some capital budget retreats of the council this fall, which is unusual for us. We usually start that in the spring. But because we do have a package that we spent 6 months working on before it was ultimately rejected, we'll use that as a starting point for budget discussions this fall. And my hope is we'll be able to have a package put together before the end of the calendar year, but it could go a little longer.
I don't want to misquote you, but I know that the day after that vote, you were in the paper saying that it was a very bad decision on the part of city council. And part of that decision, you're very keen on the streetcar. Is that why it was a very bad decision? Because it postpones the streetcar down Trade Street?
No, I think more than any substantive piece of the package, you have to understand that our budget process goes over a six-month period. So by the time we get to what's the final decision on the budget, folks have had an opportunity to take things out, put things in, all around the world. By the time we get to that budget vote, whether we accept it or reject it, the thing that really upset me was that there wasn't an affirmative idea from those who rejected the budget as to what they wanted to do. And the reality is the state law requires us to approve a tax rate every year. We have to affirmatively approve a tax rate. And for about 2 weeks there, we had no consensus on a tax rate. We finally got there. And I was nervous that we were going to have to go into a continuation budget and put the city's AAA bond rating at risk.
When your predecessor, Matt McCrory, was mayor, he got a lot of flack for his standing behind the Lynx Blue Line, putting it, buying the land, developing the thing, and putting it. And until it opened, there were tons of naysayers who thought this was the biggest boondoggle to come down the pike ever. There are a lot of people who don't understand this streetcar idea.
Yeah, that's true.
Why are you so – because the bus does run from Johnson C. Smith to Presbyterian out to East Lamar. So why is the streetcar such a good idea? This is not a commuter train. This is a streetcar.
Yeah. There are three big reasons. The economic development catalyst that the streetcar would be. Now, again, we're not talking about whether the city is going to have a streetcar or not. The city is going to have a streetcar. Right now, we're going to have a mile-and-a-half stretch that's going to run up to the transportation center from Presbyterian
and
Hospital.
And let's be clear, this is the city's streetcar. This is not CATS.
Right.
Okay.
The question is whether we add another 2.5-mile segment to it. And I think that both on the east and the west sides of our city, there will be investment that will come as a result of not only the development of that 4-mile stretch, but also the speculative investments that come as a result of the city making that statement. So that's number one. Number two, the streetcar runs on electricity, not on gas. And so you start to realize operating savings both because of that and also because one streetcar is the equivalent of two buses. So it has more carrying capacity on two of the three most heavily traveled bus routes. And then finally, frankly, I don't think our transit system will ever be as robust as it can be if we don't build it out. And right now, the sales tax, the recession has hit the sales tax so much that the reserve capacity that we expected over the next 25 years has basically been eaten up, and it will not get built under the sales tax at all. So the reason why we're coming back and looking at this from a different funding standpoint now isn't because we just woke up one day and decided we wanted to fund it with property taxes. It's because the reality is the sales tax won't support it.
So are you saying it will never get built out?
I believe that unless the city council acts, it will never get built out.
So we'd have to find alternative sources of funding.
Absolutely.
To build it out. Are there any ideas on the table?
There are many ideas, but unlike some parts of the country, Charlotte and North Carolina is not a home rule state. So local government doesn't have the ability to just dream up revenue sources. We have to get approval from Raleigh, and in some cases, referenda have to be passed to do that. So we're not in a situation where we can just dream up revenue sources.
Does Raleigh get us?
I think on many areas, yes. But, of course, Raleigh is changing a little bit. You know, for the first time, we got a Republican General Assembly.
Well, let me ask you. We have a Republican General Assembly, and the House is led by a local guy,
mm-hmm.
Tom Tillis.
Yeah.
And Pat McCrory is running for governor, and he seems to be, at this point in time, the front runner. Now, I know there are Republicans and you're a Democrat, but is that a good – if Pat McCrory were to win and the Republicans maintain at least control of the House under Tom Tillis, is that a good thing for Charlotte?
Well, I don't know. I tell you one thing. I am supporting Pat's opponent very strongly. Pat was a strong supporter of transit when he was mayor here. I don't know whether he'll be as strong a supporter of transit as Governor of North Carolina, and particularly on projects like streetcars that he opposed as mayor. I'm not so sure he's going to be a big barn-burning supporter of streetcars as governor.
Anonymous writes in on our email, you're becoming more and more public with your support of President Obama and of the Democratic Party in general. Why does this conflict with your role as mayor of Charlotte? Well, you're a Democrat.
Yeah. I mean, I've always been a supporter of President Obama, that's not been a secret, but that doesn't get in the way of what I hope are good decisions for the city of Charlotte.
So let's get back to your support of Walter Dalton over Pat mm-hmm. McCrory. I know he's a Democrat, Walter Dalton, but McCrory is a longtime mayor who arguably did some very good things happened while he was mayor for the city of Charlotte, economic development-wise. Why wouldn't you at least tacitly support him?
Well, a couple of things. As mayor of Charlotte, I have tried to do as much as I can to help the youth in this community. I've expanded the youth employment program. We had 45 kids when I came into office in that program. We've now grown it to 3,200 experiences this summer. We've worked with Project Lift and tried to make sure we help education. And I can't go back over the last over the 14 years he was mayor and find a position on education. In addition to that, as much as I like Pat personally, I think that this state has some very critical issues, and I think divided government is probably a good idea for North Carolina going forward. So if we're going to have a Republican General Assembly, I think it's probably good to have divided government.
Jim writes, Mr. Mayor, any comments on the Chick-fil-A controversy? I see your good friend and mine, Mayor Tommy Amenio of Boston, I think that's how you say his name, as well as Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel, are taking them to task and, in fact, telling them they are not welcome in those two cities. And yeah. This is because of the owner of Chick-fil-A's stance on gay marriage. It's biblically based.
Yeah. Well, as you know, I took a position in opposition to the proposed amendment in North Carolina. I was very public about that, and I'll leave it there. I don't generally get enmeshed in these little kerfuffles that come up over private sector.
It's a pretty big
folks.
Deal, don't you think, that with the mayor of Chicago is telling Chick-fil-A you're not welcome in our city?
Totally.
They're going to try to keep them out?
Yeah, I mean, I understand that. Different city.
Okay. Let's put your headphones on. We'll take a few calls before before we run out of time, and we'll focus on the east side for a second. Jim, welcome to the program. Try to keep your questions short.
Hey, thanks, guys. Listen, I was just calling to affirm what the mayor was saying about fixing up areas of West Charlotte and blighted areas of the city. I think it's going to pay huge dividends if we do this. Because I think, you know, I'm an employee of CMS, and I can tell you right now, if parents have good jobs, they have well-paying jobs with good benefits, then this is going to pay off, you know, for CMS in the future.
I totally agree. And if you look at a map of our city, you look at where property values have declined, you look where folks are using high food stamp utilization. You look where schools are challenged. They're all in the same places. We have an obligation as a city to make every part of our city as good as it can be. And frankly, I represent folks in those areas just like I represent folks in the thriving parts of the city.
Jim, thank you for your call. We don't generally deal in rumor on this program, but there is a rumor going around that city employees have been told to call the Democratic National Convention the significant event, as opposed to referring to it as the DNC. Is that true?
I have not heard that. I've not heard that. What a euphemism. I don't know.
Yes. All right. Mayor Anthony Fox, I guess you'll be front and center in the convention. And do you get to speak?
We'll see. I'm hoping it's not at lunchtime.
Thank you for the hour.
You got it. Thank you.